Confessing the Truth.
Fighting the Good Fight.
Giving the smackdown to false teaching.
And so when we dismiss the sacraments and we de-emphasize the sacraments, we have lost Lutheranism indeed.
And so when we hear what the pastor says about forgiving our sins, we should believe that God is doing it and has done it with his word.
This is Steadfast Throwdown.
Welcome to the show. Eric Anderson here with Randy Asbury. Thanks for joining us today on Steadfast Throwdown after a little bit of a break. Pastor Asbury apparently needed some vacation time, which, vacation, what is that?
That is called Sabbath rest, my friend. It's in the Bible. Check it out.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. Some of us, we just sort of don't need that, do we?
What, you think you're a super pastor or something?
Oh, you know, you take your Sabbath once a week and you're good, right?
Well, and then I take my extended Sabbath once a year. How's that?
Well, at any rate, we're glad to be back after our break, and we have a good show lined up here today. Pastor Matt Richard is on. He's going to be talking to us about the Galesburg Rule. Sounds very official. And then we'll have Pastor Joe Abrahamson on later to continue our series on the Catechism. But before we go into that, just remind you to contact us either via email or on the web. Our email address is throwdown@steadfastlutherans.org. You can check us out at steadfastthrowdown.org. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/steadfastthrowdown. And you can find us on Twitter at @BJSthrowdown. Pastor Matt Richard is our first guest. He serves at Zion Lutheran Church in Gwinner, North Dakota. He will be giving a presentation in September on the Galesburg Rule. His presentation is called The Galesburg Rule, Time to Modify or Abolish. Pastor Richard, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about this Galesburg Rule. What is it?
You know, I have to confess, when I was asked to speak on the topic, I had I guess you would say, just a little bit of a fuzzy background in my mind from church history and studying it. So I had to definitely look it up a little bit and do some research. And it's actually quite fascinating. And essentially what it can be boiled down to, but there's a whole host of a context behind it, but essentially it can be boiled down to this. The Galesburg Rule really is this, that it is Lutheran pulpits are for Lutheran ministers only, and Lutheran altars are for Lutheran communicants only.
Okay, that sounds so standoffish, so exclusive. What's going on here?
Well, there's a whole history behind it, and I think that really has to be, you know, framed, because otherwise when you hear this and you say to yourself, well, Lutheran pulpits for Lutheran pastors and, you know, Lutheran altars are only for Lutherans, that sounds very exclusive. What is going on? But there's definitely a history behind it. And this dates all the way back into the 1800s, the 19th century here. And if we back way up, there was a guy named Samuel Simon Schmucker, like I guess you would say the Schmucker jelly,
like,
right?
The jellies, yes.
Yeah. So Simon Schmucker, he really deeply breathed in the ecumenical ethos of the day, you know, that ecumenical getting along with all the different churches that you rub shoulders with. And so he was a part of this synod called the General Synod. Now, he had all sorts of different synods at the time in America as America was emerging on the landscape. And so the General Synod was really led by him. And he had this, I guess you would say, this tendency to want to rub shoulders with the other denominations or the other other Christian denominations of that time. And so he was this tendency to kind of de-emphasize Lutheranism. And in fact, as time went on, there's this thing called the Definite Synodical Platform, which was in about 1855, Schmucker and another guy named Benjamin Kurtz, they wrote this thing called the Definite Synodical Platform. And really what that boiled down to was they took the Augsburg Confession, which is the, I guess you would say, the bread and butter of what it means to be a Lutheran, and they took a Sharpie to it. I mean, not literally, but they essentially took a Sharpie to the Augsburg Confession and went through and started crossing out anything and everything that was theologically offensive, anything that they deemed to be, you know, too Catholic. And so they really stripped the Augsburg Confession, making it into this almost generic confession of faith, thus opening the door for this ecumenical, you know, kumbaya singing with other churches at the time.
Okay, now you mentioned that this definite platform, and I actually have it here in front of me right now, and I'd just like to read here a small portion from it and get your thoughts. They say, in this revision, that is this recension of the Augsburg Confession, they say not a single sentence has been added to the Augsburg Confession. I think that's interesting that they're so emphatic. They're not adding anything to it. But then they continue on, whilst those several aspects of doctrine have been omitted, which have long since been regarded by the great mass of our churches as unscriptural and as remnants of Romish error. Now, one question, you did mention that Schmucker was interested in ecumenism and rubbing shoulders with maybe the Protestants, but they do seem to be wanting to put more distance between themselves and in the Roman Church. Is that a fair analysis?
Yeah, you know, I would say that would be, you know, part of it. But, you know, we have to look at the things that they actually cut out. I mean, they cut out private confession and absolution. There's even, you know, as far as Christ's descent into hell, that was removed, if my memory serves me right. Baptismal regeneration, Christ's true body and blood in the supper, the forgiveness of sins in the Lord's Supper, all these things were removed. And I guess when I hear that, that's not a dismissal of Roman Catholicism. That's a dismissal of with the heart of what it means to be a Lutheran. And so I guess, yeah, you know, if you want to start cutting away, cutting anything out that is Roman Catholic, you know, I can understand that. But they kept cutting and cutting and cutting, so there was nothing left that resembles Lutheranism at all, according to the original intent of the Augsburg Confession.
So, Matt, you focused on the Augsburg Confession. I'm curious, were they cutting out the other confessions in the Book of Concord, things like the Apology of the Augsburg Confession, the small called articles of that Martin Luther wrote, the catechisms, the Formula of Concord? Were they getting rid of those things as well?
Yeah, for both of them, I should just say back to Schmucker, I know for him, you know, he definitely embraced the Augsburg Confession and the small catechism, and that's about it. And so things like the small call and the Formula Concord and so forth were not embraced by him as mandatory or essential confessions that the church needed. So it was, at first, it was a very diminished confession, basically just being the Augsburg. By no means am I saying that the Augsburg Confession, it does not have potency to it, but he was just holding to the Augsburg Confession and then the small catechism, but then he couldn't even stand at that. And later on, where we see in the definite platform, he actually removed and actually cut out sections of that to make it more palatable for the day and age.
Well, they actually give some justification, historical justification, I suppose, in the definite platform, saying that, you know, a quarter of a century after Luther's death, these and other writings of Luther and Melanchthon, together with another work which neither of them ever saw, the Formula of Concord, were made binding on ministers and churches. I suppose, you know, we'd say that's what we do today in the Evangelical Lutheran Church. Not by the church herself acting of her own free choice, but they were made binding by the civil authorities of certain kingdoms and principalities. The majority of Lutheran kingdoms, however, rejected one or more of them, and the Augsburg Confession alone has been acknowledged by the entire Lutheran church. I'm curious what you make of that. I mean, first of all, is that historically true that only the Augsburg Confession has been received universally? And if that's true, then why are we confessing these other documents? Is that maybe somewhat schismatic of us?
Well, I do know that, for instance, this is going to be looking a little bit north of Germany. I do know some of the Scandinavian churches, Norway and the Danish and so forth, not all of them embraced the whole Book of Concord. I mean, for them, they embraced the Augsburg Confession and the Small Catechism. So, you know, when it really comes down to it, I think it's one thing to dismiss the things like the Formula Concord and the Small Called. I mean, that is one aspect. But then this other aspect of taking the Augsburg Confession apart, you know, I know it's once been said by a Lutheran theologian that once we dismiss the sacraments, we no longer have Lutheranism. And so when we dismiss the sacraments and we de-emphasize the sacraments, we have lost Lutheranism indeed. And that is essentially what was happening with the Augsburg Confession by them removing anything that was not palatable for the ecumenical, I guess you would say, ecumenical ethos of the day.
Now, you mentioned the ecumenical ethos of the day. It seems to me, as I recall from the Augsburg Confession, that Melanchthon and others, and then Luther by distance here, they were basically saying, we are the ecumenical church. We are the church of all the ages. What's different between the Augsburg Confession being ecumenical and this 19th century movement saying, we're going to be ecumenical, that is, try to bring everybody together?
Yeah, and I think there's different ways that a person can actually approach the confessions, and I'm really pulling from Charles Aaron's book in thinking about this. He has a book called Testing the Boundaries, and he talks about the different ways that we can approach the confessions. We can approach them as a Protestant consensus is one way. We can approach the confessions as a catechesis and teaching tool or doctrinal norms. Or historical decisions. And for us as confessional Lutherans, we would really hold to the confessions really showing us our doctrinal norms, shaping our theology. So therefore, they're documents that are very much living and breathing for us today. They're not just necessarily documents that we gather around just to have a consensus, but rather they shape and form our theology and preaching today. So I think it really depends on how one approaches the confessions. That makes a huge distinction in how one understands them, treats them, and implements them in the church.
Okay, we are talking with Pastor Matt Richard from Zion Lutheran Church in Gwinner, North Dakota. We're discussing the Galesburg Rule. That's a rule that says Lutheran pulpits are for Lutheran ministers only. Lutheran altars are for Lutheran communicants only. We'll continue this discussion on the other side of this break.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
What is Steadfast Throwdown? It's a program that helps you confess the truth, fight the good fight of faith, and give the smackdown to false teaching. God's truth gives you life and salvation in Jesus Christ, but false teaching robs you of that. Join Randy Asbury and me, Eric Anderson, for Steadfast Throwdown on AM 1360 KNGN and KNGN.org. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Steadfast Throwdown.
Are you looking for a way to dive deeper into the lectionary? Have you been craving a more in-depth look at the scriptures you'll hear in church on Sunday? Join us for Lamplight Conversations as we dive into the lectionary. Hear pastors from across the globe discuss and converse about the beauty and consistency of the scriptures and the glorious gospel of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Listen to Lamplight Conversations on demand or listen live at www.kngn.org. Lamplight Conversations, shining the light of the Lord in the darkness of this world.
Have you missed a round of Steadfast Throwdown? Would you like to search for a topic that we've covered on the show? We have just what you're looking for. It's our new website, steadfastthrowdown.org. Listen on demand at steadfastthrowdown.org. Search for topics and guests at steadfastthrowdown.org. Check it out, bookmark it, and follow us at steadfastthrowdown.org.
Hello, I am Pastor Evan Giglein, and I'm here with Pastor Brian Wolfmuller.
Yeah, that's right.
Pastor Wolfmuller agrees with everything that I say.
Yeah, that's right.
Table Talk Radio is a theological game show, which means we play various games, which are just an excuse to talk about theology.
Yeah, that's right.
And I am the main talent.
Yeah, that's right.
You can listen to Table Talk Radio by clicking on the podcast tab at tabletalkradio.org.
Yeah, that's right.
Welcome back to Steadfast Throwdown. I'm Randy Asbury with co-host Eric Anderson, and our guest this segment is Matt Richard from Zion Lutheran Church in Gwinner, North Dakota. We are discussing the Galesburg Rule. You can email us at throwdown@steadfastlutherans.org. You can check out our website, steadfastthrowdown.org. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/steadfastthrowdown. Or you can follow us on Twitter. That's at BJSThrowdown. Pastor Richard, we've been talking about the Galesburg Rule and the Augsburg Confession. You talked about how these gentlemen, Kurtz and Schmucker from the 1900s, I'm sorry, the 1800s, the 19th century, wanted to take a Sharpie to the Augsburg Confession, get rid of certain doctrines they disagreed with. This kind of brings up the topic of peripheral doctrines. Is there such a thing as a peripheral doctrine? It seems Kurtz and Schmucker were saying, well, the only doctrine that really matters is the doctrine of justification by grace through faith. All the others are kind of what on the edges, on the periphery. Would you agree or disagree? Why or why not?
That has been actually stated to me many times over the past, 10 plus years of being a pastor. Usually it comes about, Pastor, let's just keep the main thing the main thing. We do not have to split and divide over, insignificant things like baptism and communion and so forth. And so those things actually divide the church, and we just need to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. I've gotten that many times. I know other pastors have gotten it as well. The problem with that is there's an assumption that there's a conflict between these doctrines. For instance, that there's a conflict between Jesus's death on the cross and something such as baptism. But the reality is things like baptism are actually the means that God uses to deliver the benefits accomplished on Christ's cross to us. And so things like baptism and communion, I would not necessarily see as peripheral things. They are things that God means that God uses to deliver us grace. And even things like our eschatology. Now, obviously, we are not saved by our view of eschatology. Our eschatology doesn't justify us. But here's the concern. The reason why we want to maintain a solid stance and teach clearly a clear eschatology is because a wrong view of these things or not addressing it can allow these maybe incorrect doctrines to bleed back into our theology of justification and mess that up. I know Dr. Kolb, Robert Kolb, uses an excellent example of our head being Christ and the heart being justification. And if you have a bum arm with a gash in it, which would be maybe that arm would represent a peripheral doctrine, that actually that poisonous or that wound in the arm can actually go back and impact things like justification, the heart, and cause a person to theologically die. So we want to maintain and hold a clearness of doctrine throughout the whole body because we want good health as people of Christ's word for us.
So would you really say there is no such thing as a peripheral doctrine?
Well, I would say that there are doctrines such as, now obviously we would say justification is at the heart. The doctrine of who Christ is very important. But you can have errors, I would say you can have erring views on things like end times. Now, we would obviously say, now that is not going to damn a person, but it can lead to impacting more important doctrines such as justification. They're all important, I should say, but those other doctrines can actually impact things such as justification because all doctrine is really they're not autonomous. That's one thing to keep in mind. Individual doctrines are not autonomous. Rather, they are actually connected. So, for example, a person's view of original sin has a great deal of shaping how one formulates, delivers, and understands the doctrine of justification. And how one understands justification is going to impact how one views the church. And how one views the church is going to impact their view of eschatology. They all are linked together. And so to dismiss a peripheral doctrine, not to touch it or say it's irrelevant, is just not a wise thing.
So would you say that if I want to get rid of a peripheral doctrine, let's say the doctrine of the real presence of Jesus in the sacrament of the altar, that might be like cutting off my arm.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, we look at God's great gifts to us. He gives us, we're baptized into him, and he gives us his body and blood. And these are great gifts that he gives to us. But we go and we actually cut out something like, you know, the real presence. Well, that's going to actually come and impact our view of the incarnation, too. We see those things connected. And so you mess with one doctrine or you dismiss it as nothing to be too worried about or insignificant. That directly will link to other doctrines. And like a falling house of cards, the whole thing can come tumbling down.
Now, I've heard it said that if you just take, like, I don't know, is it 5 seconds or 10 seconds? And, you know, you just time that out, that every 5 or 10 seconds, another person dies and maybe goes to hell. So there's certainly an urgency to the church's mission. It sounds like a guy like Schmucker wanted to make Lutheranism more versatile, to make it maybe more flexible or palatable. Wouldn't that ultimately help to reach more people and save them from hell? And wouldn't that ultimately be a good thing?
You know, I think we can maybe putting the best construction on Schmucker as well as others that go down this line of thought, and I have done this myself as a pastor too. We have to put the best construction on it, saying, you know, that's wonderful for the zeal for evangelism and so forth. But when, like I said, what we've hit before, when you start throwing everything else out, or you start dismissing things that maybe are not as palatable, more difficult to understand, you start eroding things.
Well, I think putting the best construction on a guy like Schmucker, we do have to acknowledge that he maybe had a godly impulse in this whole idea of wanting to make Lutheranism maybe more palatable, more flexible, a little more inclusive. If people are dying every, however, 5 or 10 seconds, and maybe even going to hell, and we recognize that there's an urgency to the church's mission, wouldn't it be maybe ultimately a good thing to be a little more compromising, a little more flexible? Wouldn't that ultimately result in maybe more people being saved?
Yeah, that's a good question. One thing we have to keep in mind is when it comes to the scriptures, scriptures are an overarching narrative. You know, when we look at the overarching narrative of the scriptures, we start off with God being the creator, and then we have the fall. So we have the creation, we have the fall, and then we also have Christ who comes to us as fallen individuals, and then he delivers grace to us, and then after grace, if we receive the grace, we look forward to the final consummation where all things are made right and true. So there's this overarching narrative of who we are, that we're created, that we have fallen in the fall into sin, that Christ saves us, and that there is redemption in Jesus, and we look forward to the great eschaton to come. So I guess real quick, pulling this back, if we just focus in on one section of that story, that is good and true, but we have to keep in mind that there's a whole overarching story that this Christian gospel is within. In fact, it is this whole story of God's plan of redemption. And so if we start going in and saying, you know, this portion we don't like, it's a little offensive, and this portion we don't like is a little offensive, and you know what, this is a peripheral thing that we don't need to focus on, it's just an insignificant part. What we actually end up doing is we end up taking a scissor to a story. Imagine taking a story and writing it out on a sheet of paper, and you start cutting out all these parts that are offensive. When you're all done with it, all that you're left with is a sheet of paper with a couple words and a bunch of big holes in it. And when you do that, how much do you come and tell that story is no longer the story, if that makes sense? So I would say that when we start cutting, where do we stop and what do we cut out? And in fact, if we do that too much, we actually lose the whole overarching story of what God has done to save us through this plan of redemption.
Okay, now the Galesburg rule, Lutheran pulpits are for Lutheran ministers, Lutheran altars are for Lutheran communicants. I mean, I haven't seen lately a Methodist preacher in a Lutheran pulpit, and I think many of our congregations understand the importance of being instructed, examined, and absolved, and so we don't just open up our communion rails to whoever comes in off the street. So what can we take from this discussion for life in the church today?
Yeah, I think there's a real contemporary interpretation of this, if we could say. You know, obviously, I think you're right in saying that there's enough of a understanding that, hey, a Lutheran pulpit is for a Lutheran minister. But one thing that we can unfortunately see, and I've been guilty of this myself, and that is letting other theologies that are not Lutheran creeping into the Lutheran pulpit. And so I would even expand this to say that Lutheran pulpits are for Lutheran theology. Lutheran divine services are for Lutheran hymnody and so forth. Because here's the problem. When we allow different theologies, whether it's American evangelicalism or Eastern Orthodox theology and so forth, when we allow those things to come into a Lutheran pulpit or into Lutheran songs or not Lutheran songs, but into the hymnody and songs of the church, when you have those two different sources coming at you at the parishioner, you will have two different sources of information that contradict.
Okay, and with about 30 seconds, could you comment on the issue of maybe participating in joint prayer services with other denominations and even non-Christians?
What it actually does is it does a great disservice to parishioners when you try to mash and amalgamate two different theologies together that are not meant to cohesively go together. And so that is the great tragedy of this, when we mix those things together.
Our guest has been Pastor Matt Richard from Zion Lutheran Church in Gwinner, North Dakota. Stay with us. We'll have Pastor Joe Abrahamson with us on the other side of the break, and we'll be talking about the Small Catechism, Confession and Absolution, and the Office of the Keys.